Want to teach your kids financial literacy, but not sure where to start? Greenlight can help. With Greenlight, parents can keep an eye on kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens use a card of their own to build money confidence. As a parent, you can send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and more. It's a convenient way to run your household, customized to your family's needs, and the easy way to raise financially smart kids. Get started with Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Have you ever covered a carpet stain with a rug? Ignored a leaky faucet? Pretended your half-painted living room is supposed to look that way? Well, you're not alone. We've all got unfinished home projects. Whether it's a door that sticks or a disorganized closet or an AC unit that only works half the time, it all matters. You just haven't taken care of it yet. But there's an easier way. Just download the Thumbtack app. You can search for what you need done and find tons of highly rated pros right in your neighborhood. Check prices, reviews, and book a pro right on the spot. Plus, you'll know what to tackle next, because Thumbtack is the app that shows you what to do, who to hire, and when. Pull out your phone, and in just a few taps, say goodbye to all those unfinished home projects, and say hello to caring for your home the easier way. Download Thumbtack and start a project today.
Alrighty, rocking and rolling. Hour number three of our radio program. It is the Zach Gelb Show. Timberwolves get on the board. Last night, series still 3-1 in favor of Dallas. I like Dallas to win this series in six. Rangers lose in overtime. Third straight game of overtime. Now it's Rangers and Panthers all tied up at two apiece. I will be at Madison Square Garden tomorrow night for game five. Going to the game with former CBS Sports Radio personality and Sean Mraz. You know him as Mraz. Now he's down the hall, so I'm sure Mraz will make me do a bunch of social media content with him coming up tomorrow night. And tonight you got Oilers and Stars, and Dallas is up 2-1. Dallas is in a similar spot the Rangers were in up until last night, where it was 2-1. And they took game three on the road to go up 2-1. And we'll see if Dallas could do what the Rangers failed to do last night, which was take a 3-1 lead. And the Oilers need to, on their home ice, get a victory tonight after the ups and downs that we did see in game three, which was a truly crazy game with the hot start that the Oilers got off to in game one, in game three in the first period. And then they, for a while, fell apart in the second, but then got that late goal, and then in the third period just had a no-show as the Stars did take a 2-1 series lead. I want to get to this list from CBS Sports. So they came out with their top 25 Power Four college football coaches entering the 2024 season. It is weird still when you see now Power Four after all those years with the Power Five, with the Pac-12 being no more. But they ranked their top 25 Power Four college football coaches entering the 2024 season. Tom Fornelli did the list. So I'll quickly run through it. We'll really go off the top 10, but I'll give you all 25. Matt Campbell of Iowa State in at 25. Marcus Freeman of Notre Dame in at 24. Josh Heupel of Tennessee in at 23. Sonny Dykes, who was in the national championship 2 years ago, of TCU in at 22. Eli Drinkwitz from Missouri in at 21. You had Mark Stoops of Kentucky in at 20, but A&M fans didn't want Mark Stoops. Louisville, Jeff Brohm in at 19. Kirk Ferentz of Iowa in at 8. Luke Fickell, who had Cincinnati national champ or in the college football playoff and now just completed his first year at Wisconsin, in at 17. Dave Dorn of NC State in at 16. Mike Gundy of Oklahoma State, I'm a man, I'm 40, in at number 15. Lane Kiffin at 14 of Ole Miss. Chris Klieman in at 13 of Kansas State, won the Big 12 2 years ago. Lance Leipold, who's done a great job for Kansas Standards in at Kansas at 12. James, I can't win a big game, Franklin, in at number 11 out of the Penn State Nittany Lions. Now, for the top 10 that they did, Lincoln Riley of USC, right? The Wiz kid. He's in at number 10. Dan Lanning of the Ducks of Oregon in at 9. Mike Norvell of Florida State in at 8. Kalen DeBoer, formerly of Washington, now of Alabama, in at 7. Kyle Whittingham in at 6 of the Utah Utes. Steve Sarkisian in at 5. Brian Kelly of LSU at 4. Dabo, I don't want to find a way to utilize the transfer portal, Sweeney of Clemson in at 3. And here's the one that's the most egregious. Crying Day. Ryan Day of The Ohio State in at 2. And then Kirby Smart in at 1. Now, when I go through the list, I have my top 10. When I saw their list first, just the headline, top 25 coaches of the Power Four schools, I immediately created my top 10 list. I have the same top 10 in terms of the coaches in the top 10, but a different order. Coaches that weren't in the top 10, I actually think Lane Kiffin, to me, was one that I was like, okay, if you got to make a case, take someone out, put someone in, maybe it's Lane Kiffin. He was on 14 in that list. He would be my number 11. But when I go through my top 10, I'll do this from 10 to 1. Or actually, I'm going to do this 1 to 10. Because it's going to show you, after the first name, how difficult this is. Because remember, no more Jim Harbaugh, no more Nick Saban. So those were two coaches entering last season where it's Saban or Smart, 1-2, pick your poison. And Jim Harbaugh was in the top 5 after two Big Ten championships and two appearances in the college football playoff. But with Harbaugh now off to the NFL with the Chargers and Saban off to the college game day desk, this top 10 is very difficult. And there's a lot of good coaches in here that aren't great and don't have championships. So Kirby Smart is the standard right now for college football coaches. He's in at number 1. After that, I think Dabo needs to be in the top 5, but I don't have to put him 2. I put Dabo Sweeney in at 3. The coach that I put in the middle of Kirby Smart and Dabo Sweeney is Kalen DeBoer. And part of that is based off what he has done and what he projects to do in the future. Because like Dabo, I think can make the college football playoff again with the 12-team playoff, but I don't believe Dabo's ever going to have Clemson being elite again, where they're winning a national championship or national championships. But when you factor in previous success, that's got to get Dabo up the list here on some of these tiebreakers. So I have Kalen DeBoer in the middle there, taking Washington to a national championship game and now getting the Alabama job with more resources, and that's a creme de la creme job, and that's been the standard for the most part of college football for the last decade plus, I do believe Kalen DeBoer is going to win one national title, bare minimum, at Alabama. So Kirby Smart's one for my top 10 college football coaches of just the Power Four schools. Kalen DeBoer is 2. Dabo Sweeney is in at 3. In the fourth spot, I think this guy is still the most underrated coach in college football. For the last 2-3 years, all we did was talk about Caleb Williams. And I know for one of those years, Caleb Williams was at Oklahoma. But Caleb Williams' first year at USC, Kyle Whittingham won a Pac-12 championship. And he's won back-to-back Pac-12 championships. He did not win it this past year. But last year, his team was still good, solid, without their starting quarterback, Cam Rising. Kyle Whittingham has been at this for a long time. If he wanted a bigger job, because Utah's not a big job. It's a good job, but it's not a big job. If he wanted a big, big, big job, he could have got it by now. But he's never going to leave Utah. So I have Kyle Whittingham in at four. In at five, this is where it's difficult. Because I think a lot of recency bias will occur. And this dude, so many people are up and down on him. But I did put Brian Kelly of the LSU Tiger family in at number five. When Brian Kelly got the job at LSU, right away because of the dancing and him coming up with the fake Southern accent, when he kept on saying family, 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 a lot of people were out on Brian Kelly. Then in year one, after losing that game to Florida State to open up the season, Brian Kelly ends up getting LSU to the SEC title game where they lose it. And then last year, their defense was horrible, but Jaden Daniels did win the Heisman Trophy. Brian Kelly got Notre Dame to the college football playoffs, right? He had Notre Dame in a national championship game with Manti Te'o being a Heisman finalist, even though they got smothered in that game by Alabama, and that was in the old BCS system. But Kelly, with what he did restoring Notre Dame and now being good at LSU, not great, right? The standard there is win a national championship. And they've had three coaches since 2000 win a national championship. Saban, Les Miles, and then obviously, go Tigers in Ed Orgeron. But Kelly's been good enough at LSU. So I put him in there at top five, in at number five, when you are factoring in past success and then how you project him to be in the future. So Kirby Smart's one, Kalen DeBoer's two for me, Dabo Sweeney's three, Kyle Whittingham's four, and Brian Kelly's an F5. 6 through 10, if you thought the top five was difficult, 6 through 10 is even tougher. I have called this coach overrated for years. And I think when I call this coach overrated, people go, oh, you're bashing him. You're saying he's bad. No, 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 no. People just have not listened to what I've said. I said for years, Lincoln Riley is a very, very, very good coach. But I can't call him great. Because Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma had a countless amount of Heisman Trophy winners and got to the college football playoff a bunch, but never got a college football playoff win. And when he got the job at USC, everyone's like, home run hire, sensational hire, and it's a very good hire. But this dude just had the best player, you could argue, in college football for the last 2 years in Caleb Williams, and he couldn't figure out what to do with his defense. And his stubbornness heading into last year to Alex Grinch cost them big time. Think about it. USC, in year one, right? Williams wins the Heisman Trophy. He gets hurt in the Pac-12 championship game, and he doesn't win. Okay. Still a successful season. But then the following season, you can't even sniff a college football playoff appearance. You can't even sniff the Pac-12 title game. It's because of your defense. But Lincoln Riley has still produced a bunch of Heisman Trophy winners, and he's usually in the college football playoff conversation. He's in at six. The one thing, though, that really annoys me with Lincoln Riley, and Samter sent me this story, so forgive me, I forget where it was. If we could just credit it properly, Samter, just let me know where this story was. But there was a report that Lincoln Riley did everything in his power to try to get out of the opening game of this season for them, which is an isolated spot on Sunday night, September 1st, on ABC at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time against LSU. He tried to do everything in his power. Do you have where the report was?
Yeah, it came from Matt Hayes of Saturday Down South.
Okay, so credit to Matt. I think some people will raise an eyebrow to that report. I think it's true, though. Because if you go back to when Lincoln Riley took the job at USC, and then it came out that Oklahoma, right, was going to the SEC. Some people were like, oh, maybe that's him trying to duck the SEC. And then little did we know, eventually, USC ends up going to the Big Ten, which is the top two conference in college football. But it wouldn't surprise me if that story is true, that Lincoln Riley was trying to bail out of having to play LSU in the opening game of the season. Because you look at the rest of his schedule, Utah State, Michigan without Harbaugh now, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Penn State, Maryland, Rutgers, Washington, Nebraska, UCLA, Notre Dame. Like, for the first year in your Big Ten, and we'll see what happens with USC this year, but there's no one on your schedule that really intimidates you. And I know it's a 12-team playoff, so you would think USC should be in the playoff mix, but opening up that season where people are trying to turn on you and LSU, right? You know they're going to give you everything they can with Brian Kelly. It would not shock me if he was trying to get out of that Big Ten SEC type of matchup. But it's just a report that's out there. But right now I have Lincoln Riley, long story short, in at number 6. 7, it's Steve Sarkisian. I am really impressed with the Texas program that Sark took over, how quickly we could finally put to bed the Sam Ellinger, we're back. Because that was used to really torture Texas fans. He was able to get Arch Manning. We haven't even seen Arch Manning yet outside of that spring game. And Quinn Ewers the last 2 years has been successful. And you had Texas in a 4-team college football playoff last year. So what Sark has done at Texas is very impressive on his last opportunity. Now, when I put Sark in at 7, and I don't have Ryan Day in there, people are going to say, Zach, why don't you have Ryan Day in front of Sark just for starters? I'm more impressed with what Sark has done than what Ryan Day has done. Like, Ryan Day took over a machine. They were humming under Urban Meyer. Michigan had no chance to take down Ohio State. And I get it. Ryan Day only has 8 losses in his career as the Ohio State football coach. Only 8, which started in 2019. But the standard there is to beat Michigan and win a national championship. Yes, he's got to a national championship game, but when you allowed Michigan to overtake you and not only defeat you once, but beat you 3 times, and Michigan won a national championship, Ryan Day, you're a top 10 coach. But this program has regressed, and I have to hold you accountable to that. So your record suggests that you should be in the top 3, top 5, but you have to have context to that. So Ryan Day's in at 8. Number 9, I got to give this guy a lot of credit, and he probably would have been higher up on the list, and I've been a fan of his for a long time going back to Memphis. But it's really nothing more that he could have done this year. Like, his team went undefeated. And the last 2 years, he has brought Florida State back, which is very impressive, just like how Sark has brought Texas back. But because he lost his quarterback because of injury, he didn't make the college football playoff. He couldn't have done anything more. But I got to have you in a college football playoff appearance, outside of Winningham, and I think it's just more of a standard on, how many Pac-12 championships have you won. But a guy like Mike Norvell, I think he's going to continue to climb up that list. He's in at number 9. And if you read that story on ESPN, there's a reason why DeBoer and Norvell were at the top of the list for Alabama to go replace Nick Saban. And then number 10, it's Dan Lanning. I love the energy. I think Dan Lanning, and I mean this in a good way, is a football psycho. I told him that on the air. When he gets on the sideline, that's like his sanctuary, and he's locked in, and he just goes to like a different place. The one thing that I have to say about Dan Lanning, who has done a great job in Eugene, and a really good job in Eugene, and you saw what he did last year. But even with all that he's done with Bo Nix and that team and what they've been able to do, last year you had 2 opportunities to beat Washington, you couldn't beat them. So I can't really put you higher than where you were when you look at the tiebreakers with the other coaches. So those are my top 10 coaches in college football entering this season. Based off of the past, and I project them to be in the future too, a mixture of it. Kirby Smart 1, Kalen DeBoer 2, Dabo Swinney 3, Kyle Whittingham 4, Brian Kelly 5, Lincoln Riley 6, Steve Sarkisian 7, Ryan Day 8, Mike Norvell 9, Dan Lanning in at number 10. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. We'll come on back with a news brief.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
All righty, news brief time on the Zach Gelb Show. Let's start off with Brandon Bean, the general manager of the Buffalo Bills. He was on the Athletic NFL podcast and was asked why they traded Stephon Diggs when they did. Listen up.
A player of his caliber, you weigh a lot of things on the situation, but you know, ultimately, I don't need to go through all the reasons why we decided to go ahead and do that. I would say from a cap standpoint, we decided just to go ahead and eat it now, and we think we can compete and do what we need to do by eating it now and then not walk into next year and go, all right, because if we didn't, if we tried to come up with some way and split it up too many different ways, then now it's just like that albatross that you're just hanging on your neck all year. You look at your cap and you're going, oh man, look at how much money we still have dead. I'm going to be ripping myself the minute we have to walk into a year and I feel like we got to play with one arm tied behind our back because the cap is what it is.
That's such a bull crap answer. And I like Brandon Bean a lot. He has come on the show a ton. But I would almost just respect the Bills more if they just simply said, guys, you know why we got rid of him. We got rid of him because him and Josh Allen didn't get along anymore. They will never say that. So if you don't want to say that, then just blame it all on Steph and just be like, he wasn't fully committed as he once was to this team. Because that's the truth of the situation. Something happened between Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs. And Sean McDermott was involved too when they had him leave, right, that OTA training camp, whatever it was, I forget. And then he was like, yeah, it's alarming. Yeah, it's concerning. Something happened with those four people, Bean, Allen, McDermott, and Diggs. And it obviously got to a point where they looked at Stephon Diggs and they said the juice isn't worth the squeeze anymore. Don't tell me about the salary cap and the numbers and all. That's a bunch of baloney. It really is. I almost, by the way, just said bull bleep on the air. And I caught myself and said baloney. It was very close to saying bull bleep on the air. But it is. You got rid of him because your quarterback, your receiver, your coach, and your GM, the four of them wasn't on the same page. Coach wasn't going to go. GM wasn't going to go. So our quarterback's not going to go. So who was going to go? The wide receiver. Here is Stetson Bennett on his absence from the Rams during his rookie season a year ago.
I was home, and, you know, as far as what led to that, what transpired and all that, you know, I think we're going to keep that in-house. But, you know, it was good, you know, went back home, and, you know, thank goodness that Les and Coach McVay and everybody involved, you know, allowed me to do that.
And I was reading that there was, it was mental health related. That's why he was not around the team. There's obviously more to this story that we have not been told. Everyone has privacy to some extent. You know, I know when you're in the spotlight and you're a two-time national championship winning quarterback, and for Stetson Bennett, you were away and people want to know the answers. You know, there's only so much privacy you could give, but you do get some privacy, especially when the reality of the situation is, as great as he was in college, no one expects anything out of him in the pros. So I hope whatever he's going through, he's been able to put himself in a better situation this year and we could see a better version of Stetson Bennett. I wish him nothing but the best. Here is Elliot Wolf, the new GM or whatever, the president of football operations, whatever they call him now, with the Patriots. He was on Up and Adams with Kay Adams and he was discussing the Patriots offseason.
I'm really excited for what the future holds. My one regret so far from this offseason, particularly with the draft, is, you know, we had 8 draft picks. We only drafted 1 defensive player. And mm-hmm. So I've apologized to Coach Covington about that. But, you know, obviously he wanted what's best for the team, too. So that's one regret that I've had so far. But we'll see how it goes. We feel good about the guys we do have in here.
Well, here's the one thing, Elliot. Your biggest regret should be not getting a number one wide receiver this offseason, because it's a disservice to your young quarterback. And Drake May, who some people say is not NFL ready, I would wait, because that receiving core is still not good enough. Maybe with the second round selection of Polk and the kid out of UCF, Baker, that they could be better than what people think. And maybe you hit a gem. That would be wonderful. But you should have got a number one wide receiver this offseason, and you didn't. Here is Kendrick Perkins on the ESPN, and he went off today on Rudy Gobert.
I have the biggest regret in my media career. And Molly, I'm retired. UD, yeah. Shannon, from voting for individual awards, regular season awards, because I have done a disservice in my using my voting rights. Me voting this season for Rudy Gobert, okay, is an embarrassment for me, for Defensive Player of the Year. He's the first player that we see every single time in the postseason that becomes a defensive liability. Don't come give me these analytics Don't come giving me these plus minus stats because that's the most overrated stat in the NBA. When I look at Rudy, he has tarnished the Defensive Player of the Year award. He has. He's not respected by his peers. Unacceptable to say he's a four-time Defensive Player of the Year.
Here's where Perk is wrong. If you want to tell me you have regret because of what you've seen in the postseason, that's not why you're voting on the award. And that annoys the crap out of me with these awards. Anytime someone wins an MVP, a Defensive Player of the Year, a Rookie of the Year, Sixth Man of the Year, and then they don't have a good postseason, people go, up, they shouldn't have won the award. The award is a regular season award. So if you want to say, hey, looking back at the regular season, X, Y, and Z is why I should not have voted for him, fair. But you can't use the postseason as part of your reasoning why this guy shouldn't have won the award because it's a regular season award. Here is Shams Charania, run it back on FanDuel TV on Bronny James' workouts. Bronny James going to stay in the NBA draft. He is not going back to college.
Bronny James has over 10 workout invites during the pre-draft process, but I'm told he's only going to visit a couple of those, and that's going to include the Lakers and the Phoenix Suns. The Suns have the number 22 overall pick in the draft. He's under consideration there among, obviously, a lot of players at 22, but it's going to come down to the development plan. It's going to come down to guaranteed money, whether it's late in the first round, in the second round. But the fact that there's only going to be a couple teams, two, three teams that Bronny James visits, and the Lakers and Suns, interestingly, are among the two teams.
See, if this was Marvin Harrison Jr., remember when Marvin Harrison Jr. got some flack for the way he went about his draft process? I would get it because he was a top five pick. Bronny James, based off skill, shouldn't be a lottery pick. He may be. I don't know if he will be. I still think he'll be outside the lottery. But to be so selective and say you're only going to work out for these teams and not those teams, I don't think that benefits you. I ultimately think LeBron's trying to get his son drafted by the Lakers. That's what it is. And I wonder if you shot Bronny James up with truth serum. And I know he kind of gave an answer a few weeks ago, but like, I want the actual truth. Do you want to play with your dad in the NBA? I really wonder what the true response would be on that. Here is Anthony Edwards. Micah Parsons was at the Mavericks-Timberwolves game last night. He had a message to Micah Parsons.
What am I supposed to say? I'm supposed to say we're going to lose game five? No, I'm not going to never say that. Micah Parsons, you know, he was rocking the AE1s, and I told him he wore a size 14. I'll bring back some nice shoes for game six. That's what I told him.
This is where it's so stupid with the mic'd up conversations. Anthony Edwards is 100%. So I guess a microphone or some conversation got caught where he's telling them all, bring you back a pair for game six. And people are like, oh, is that a guarantee? Is that a guarantee that you're going to win game five? Like, it's so stupid at this point. Once again, what is he supposed to say? Yeah, we're not going to win game five. We're going to lose game five. We suck. We're terrible. And this series is over in five games. Come on. Here is Fred Tutcher from Tutcher and Hardy on 98.5 The Sports Hub. He made fun of Bill Walton yesterday. The day after Bill Walton passed away, let's listen up to the Boston sports radio personality.
I think we address it, but I don't know that today's the day to play it.
Well, I don't know. I mean, why not? It happened. He called in and he was acting the fool about his son on the Lakers. And they said, oh, you know, first of all, you got to buy a Jeep Wrangler.
I'm looking over these mountains, Majesty. I remember that.
Yeah, but yeah. He was like, but while he was selling cars, like, make up your mind, you phony hippie. Like, are you really selling cars or are you all about peace and love?
That's why I'm not sure if it's the day.
I think, Hardy, you might be onto something. I think today, maybe tomorrow.
I did famously hang up on Bill Walton. Yeah. All right. Here we go. Here it is. As requested. I don't say anything. Just go ahead. He's dead. It's nothing. I didn't kill him. Go ahead. Play it.
Yeah, it's kind of uncomfortable. And it's out of place. Like, I'm not going to call for anyone to be fired. I think that's just, like, so stupid here. I don't think it's as bad as what some people are making it out to be. But it's just the timing of it is not good there. And I listened to the full thing. So they had Bill Walton on. And this was after, I think it was right after the Lakers beat the Celtics in the finals. And he was like, who are you rooting for? Because he's a Celtic, right? His son was playing for the Lakers. And it was almost if Fred, and I get what Fred was trying to do. Like, I would ask Bill Walton this question. He was all like, who are you rooting for? You are a Celtic. You didn't win a championship with the Celtic. And obviously, you should be rooting for your son. But Bill basically kind of sidestepped the question, and since Fred didn't get the answer that he wanted, he just hung up on him. But to bring up yesterday and call him like a phony hippie because he was promoting something and you think it violated, right, the hippie guidelines and things like that, like, come on, what are we doing? Just that's a... The Fred Tutcher's a funny guy, usually. That's him there and his crew trying to be funny when in reality, it's just like you didn't need that yesterday. You know, it's kind of stupid. Let's go to Aaron Boone, Talking Yanks podcast on Angel Hernandez retiring.
Honestly, I think sometimes he's unfairly the poster child or the face of bad umpiring or whatever it may be. To me, there's worse umpires out there. And, you know, I feel like there's some things that are a little unfairly attributed to him. Look, he's earned a lot of it and whatever. But at the end of the day, he's a really good dude. He's always handled everything with a lot of grace and certainly wish him the best.
I think I'm in the minority here. I'm actually going to miss Angel Hernandez. And when I say that, I'm fully cognizant he was a bad umpire. But there's not a lot of good stories or story points to come out of a Major League Baseball season. And at least we could all agree on one thing, that Angel Hernandez was a bad umpire. And I enjoy those days when everyone piles on Angel Hernandez. I heard Will Clark tell a story. I think Will Clark has a podcast. And it was one game that Angel was umpiring him. And there was a strike, and Will talked about how he doesn't really like to argue with umpires, but he said to Angel, hey, you know, how much like farther does he have to go in the strike zone for that to still be a strike? And he's like, oh, no, that was right in the borderline. And the guy threw the ball further outside, and he called it a strike and rung him up the next pitch. And later that night, I guess Angel Hernandez and all the umpires, they went out, and Will Clark was at the same bar as them, and he ordered them like a round of beers. And he went up to Angel Hernandez, like, hey, guys, have a good night. And Angel's like, is there anything else you want to say to me? And Will Clark was just like, nope. And then the next time, anytime there was a strike zone for Will Clark, it was like razor thin when he was at the plate. And it like everything that was even things that were in the strike zone, he would say they ended up being balls if he took the pitch. So I thought that was a pretty damn good story. I have not heard this. This is Mark Messier on the Pat McAfee show on taking psychedelics. Is that right? Listen up.
If I'm going to spend 95% working out at the gym, how can I become a better player? How can I understand the game better? How can I become a better pro by using my mind better, be tougher mentally? And to your point, I think enlightenment is a good word for it. It gave me a better perspective. It gave me some humility, and it just gave me a better perspective of the whole experience that I was in the professional sports. It made me focus more, and probably more than anything, all the possibilities that were out there. It worked for me, and it was something that I don't regret, and wow, what an experience.
I'm not gonna lie, I thought there was gonna be something juicier about that clip, Samter. Like, I thought he was gonna describe actually taking them. Messier, I love Mark Messier. He's boring on television. He is. NHL on TNT, that studio show, is so much better than what ESPN has. And Messi is probably the best one. I thought P.K. Subban was going to be a star. I just don't find P.K. I feel like he's trying too hard. And I'm not Steve Levy's fine. He's just there. But Messi has been the best one, and he doesn't really say much. He's, like, boring, as great of a player he is. But you look at NHL and TNT, Liam McHugh's sensational. Biz is hilarious. Hank has been very good on that show. Wayne Gretzky, right? You have the great one. He's been better on TV, and Anson Carter's good. That's like inside the NBA. It really is on the ice. But that, like, put it this way. When the Ranger game on TNT, I sit there and I watch the intermission. When it is on ESPN, I go do other things. Like last night I heard in the background and they went to Sue. He's like, oh, what do you want me to say? Like, you're paid to give an opinion. Give an opinion. Don't just say, oh, what else do you want me to say? So I just think there's no rhythm or chemistry on that show, but that was Messi on the Pat McAfee show. I thought we were going to get like a detailed version of him taking psychedelics, but
I'm just surprised that Messier took psychedelics.
Yeah.
I mean, did he take psychedelics before he guaranteed the Rangers Game 6 win in the 94 Eastern Conference Finals when he had a natural hat trick in the third period to help them get into the title game?
Ack, do you have any relationship with Messier? Just wondering.
No.
Okay.
None at all.
I was going to wonder if back in the day, maybe Ack and Messier were in the same circles. Maybe you guys were dabbling in that business.
Yeah, I don't think so.
All righty. That's the News Brief. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. We will take a break. Did you guys, I'll talk about this on the other side. Did you guys see this video of Kylie Kelce getting into it with someone trying to get a photo of Jason and Kylie Kelce when they were on a date? I have been to the restaurant. I'm a frequent summer visitor of the restaurant that they've been to. And with my previous experience of the clientele that goes to this restaurant, without having all the details, I will give you my best educated guess of what did transpire when we return. Update time first. Here's the Ackman, Rich Ackerman. Alrighty, it's time to answer Ask the Post question of the day. It's brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. David in Arizona says, Zach, who's the NBA team this offseason that needs to display the most urgency? You could submit a question by tweeting at INFSportsNet or at Zach Gelb using the hashtag AskThePros. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts. The answer is the Sixers. I think a lot of people would say the Lakers. I think a lot of people would say the Suns. Could you maybe say Milwaukee? I just think they need to be healthy. But I do believe, you know, you want to argue the Thunder to take that next step. Okay, fair. But the reason why I think it's the Sixers is because Tobias Harris is coming off the books. Tyrese Maxey displayed that he is a future star in this league. Joel Embiid, even though he gets hurt a lot, is still a damn good player. And you only have so many more years of Embiid left. You need to now go get that third piece who really needs to be that second piece, like that finisher, that closer. So we'll see who they end up trying to go get. Is it a reunion with Jimmy Butler? Do they try to go get Paul George? But you have another two-year window to try to go deliver. And we'll see if they could do so. But if they don't get that other piece, I don't think, like, it should be LeBron, but I don't think LeBron's going to go there. But a LeBron, a Paul George, or a Butler, one of those guys, Philly's got to try to go get and actually execute the deal. So I would say it's a Philadelphia 76ers to the tie-in of Embiid. So I don't know if you guys saw this. This was going, it's like an 8-second clip. It went viral. Jason Kelce and his wife, Kylie Kelce, are walking into a restaurant down at the Jersey Shore. And from what I could gather, a fan wants a photo. And I guess Kylie Kelce or Jason Kelce said, we're on a date, rather not. Like as they're walking into a restaurant, like politely said it. And the fan went berserk, this woman. And at one point, and Kylie Kelce, is a former college athlete. She's got to be like 6 feet tall. Like, I would not want to mess with Kylie Kelce. Like, she could definitely throw it down. But this lady, because she was told no from a photo, was like, oh, I don't care who you think you are. You'll never be allowed in this town again. Let me just explain the Jersey Shore to people. As I'm a frequent visitor of the Jersey Shore, and the shore town that they were in, it was reported as Sea Isle. It's actually Margate. I go to Margate at least two or three times a summer since I was like 8 years or 9 years old. They were at this restaurant, Stephen Cookies. Michael Jordan's actually been to the restaurant. Stephen Cookies is a good restaurant for down at the shore. My favorite restaurant down at the shore is Chef Vola's. Oh, they have some of the best veal parm I've ever had. But this place, Stephen Cookies, is a good restaurant. They have a good tomato salad. They have a seafood pan roast. They have some really good food. But the vibe of the restaurant, intentional or not, maybe it's the clientele because you got a lot of mainline people from Philadelphia going down having their shore house. It could be a little snobby. All right? There's some people in there that like to flash some of their wealth. So I'm just going to assume here, knowing that restaurant, which is a very good restaurant, the people that run the restaurant are hardworking people. It's a phenomenal restaurant. But you go there, it's like a scene. And you go there, and you have a lot of wealthy people, and there's like just some arrogance from those people. Doesn't mean the restaurant's bad. Like, I'm going down to that restaurant this summer. It's really good. It's a good meal. It's a fun time with the group of people I go with. But you look around and it's like, oh, that person's there, this person's there. And it's there's just a certain thing when it's a lot of mainline snobs, if I'm just going to call it what it is. And I have friends that are mainline snobs, so I can say that. But I guarantee you, this lady walked up to Kylie Kelce and probably said, like, my son or my grandson is a big Eagles fan or a Swiftie or, like, the granddaughter, some Swiftie. Can we just get a picture? And Kylie Kelce probably just politely said, because you only see 8 seconds of the video, it's just them going at each other. Kylie Kelce probably just said, hey, we're on a date. This is kind of like our privacy time. We don't really want to take a photo right now. Because once you take one photo at a place that has a lot of people from Philadelphia there, then people are going to flock to the Kelces and they're not going to be able to enjoy their night. And once the lady was told no, she probably had a few drinks in her, I would guess, just judging by the way that she was standing and trying to fight. And once she was told no, I think you had the rich snob overtake yourself. Because could you imagine saying to the wife of Jason Kelce, who could run for the mayor of Philadelphia and win it tomorrow, you're not going to be allowed in this town again. Jason Kelce could do illegal, unthinkable things, and no one in that short town would give a rat's ass. Because he's Jason Kelce. The legendary speech that he gave after the Eagles won their first and only Super Bowl. And for years, he's the most popular athlete in Philadelphia. Come on. You know, that term Karen gets used. That was a Karen. And there's no other way around it. It was a rich snob, didn't get her way, and that rich snob threw a hissy fit. It's the only other way to say it. I guarantee you that's what happened. She was told no. She probably had a few drinks coming out of a very good restaurant where the drinks are flowing, and she had a freak out because she was told no, and she probably hasn't been told no in a very long time.
And some of the stories that I'm reading is that actually Jason Kelce was in his car, which is, as we know, a Cybertruck.
Oh, yeah?
Very famously, he has a Cybertruck. One of the first to get it. He was in the car waiting to pull into a parking spot, but I guess sometimes you have to wait a little bit because, like you said, that place is very popular.
It's not the biggest parking lot.
Right, so he was apparently sitting in his Cybertruck waiting for her parking spot, and she came up to the car and started banging on the window. They got out to see what the heck this lady's talking about. She asked for the picture. They said no because, hey, you don't bang on someone's car like that.
Yeah.
So apparently there's videos of that floating around that I have not seen yet.
I know Jason Kelce a little bit. Like the nicest dude. And he even knew that his wife had no problem because you saw he was like getting up into the face of the lady to try to defuse the situation. He was just like, let my wife go. She'll take care of herself. But that's a detail I didn't know. That this lady just, like, if he would have just got out of the car and you waited, he said, hey, Jason, you mind if we get one photo? I'm sure he would have said yes. And even if he said no, he's allowed to say no. You're not like some kid. That lady looks like she's a 50, 60-something-year-old woman, for crying out loud. But the fact that she was banging on the car to get a photo? Give me a break. Like, that's always weird when someone's at dinner. The only other weirder spot, and maybe this is a story for another day, is when you run into a celebrity in a bathroom. And I've had some encounters with celebrities in the bathroom. One of them was Dan Patrick. And that's when I was a young, aspiring broadcaster. And I did not even say hello to Dan Patrick because I thought it was the weirdest place ever. And it was in a bathroom. And then I once had Dan Patrick on and revealed it. And he said, if you just wash your hands, I probably would have shook your hand and talked to you. Talk to you tomorrow, everybody. We out. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening. Peace.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Listen as Selenia tells us why she chose to vaccinate her daughter.
I definitely felt like the pros far outweighed the cons, the diseases that I am protecting my child against. They're still here. And at the end of the day, it's my job as a mother to keep my child safe.
Talk to your child's doctor and learn more at whyvaccines.com. Brought to you by Merck.